This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for being here as we cover lots of different topics of interest to Douglas County. County Commissioner Tim Freeman, and thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
So we wanted to talk about your work with the Association of ONC Counties, and of course, recently reelected as president for how many years now?
Well, I think I'm starting my eighth year as president, but I've been on the executive board for 9 years, and this will be my 10th year of being on the board. So literally the whole time I've been a county commissioner, I've been on the board.
And you were also recently appointed as Western Interstate Region Representative. Can you tell us more about what that means?
Yeah, well, we can talk about several things. So the National Association of Counties has regions throughout the United States that they have sort of the next level down of organizations. So the Western Interstate Region is 15 states here in the West. In each one of those states, it has two board positions on the board of directors. Here in Oregon, we break that down even further in that the eastern side of the county has one board slot from Oregon, and the western side of Oregon has one board slot. I'm the western board member for the National Association of Counties Western Interstate Region. So that organization focuses largely on public lands issues. The bulk of the land that is public land in the United States is in those 15 western states. So as you might imagine, we have a lot of similarities and a lot of things in common around the way that federal lands are managed, and we can share those experiences and those challenges and try to speak with one voice. It's interesting, I also serve on the committee, the National Association of Counties Public Lands Committee, and we've really combined a lot of that work between NACO WIR and NACO Public Lands, because it's often the same work. So some of those committees meetings are held in conjunction with each other. And again, we have a lot of similarities amongst the 15 western states. There's times when we have different types of usages around public lands, but the fact that we have, all of us have a tremendous amount of public lands is so much different than the East Coast, where a very small percentage of their states and counties are public lands. So here in Oregon, about a little over 50% of Oregon is federally owned and managed. Same for Douglas County, a little over 50%. So Nevada is a much higher percentage. Most of the state of Nevada is publicly owned and managed. So just those challenges around working with the federal government, helping the federal government understand the impacts that they have on our communities and our counties as the way they manage those lands, is all work that we do at WIR NACO.
And isn't that one of the big challenges, just because of the uniqueness of it, versus if you were from some other county, some other state, and you're talking about a federal policy that applies and has impacts in all 50 states, it's more easily understood by lots of office holders, but this is very specific.
Yeah, so if you're on the East Coast, public lands are primarily national parks, monuments, museums, those type of things that are a relatively small footprint on the landscape. So the impact's much different where, out here in the West, some states have, over 70% of their land is owned and controlled by the federal government. Again, Oregon's a little over 50%. So when we talk to our East Coast partners and the National Association of Counties, it's just a whole different conversation. So again, I choose and seek to be on the Western Interstate Region Board of Directors because of the uniqueness of Oregon and public lands, and my work around the Association of ONC Counties and how those federal lands are managed. It's a nice fit, and it's pretty important to have somebody that has that knowledge and experience serving on those committees, representing rural Oregon, Western Oregon, and all of Oregon on these regional and national committees.
So for the Association of ONC Counties, talk about the difference you'd think having the organization in place doing what it does has made for counties in the state.
Yes. So I'm always proud of the work we do at the Association of ONC Counties. It's interesting. We're in our 99th year. So the Association of ONC Counties was formed in 1925. So next year will be our 100-year anniversary. There's some really unique things about the Association of ONC Counties. The first unique thing is, as far as we can tell, it's the oldest county organization working on federal land management issues, directly working with the federal government in the nation. So we have that distinct history. We also have a really clear mission in that we focus only on these ONC lands. So we're a single issue organization. Unlike the Association of Oregon Counties, it works on all kinds of issues. We only work on ONC land issues, and primarily we use the 1937 ONC Act as our sort of our guideline of the work that we do. The other interesting thing about the Association of ONC Counties is we've only had four full-time executive directors, and up until last year, we'd only had three in the history of the organization. So if you think about that, you know, almost 100 years, only three executive directors. Last year, we onboarded a new executive director at the beginning of the year, to be the fourth full-time executive director. Some of those previous executive directors had decades and decades of experience and knowledge, and transitioning that to a new executive director was really one of the major goals and one of the major accomplishments of our association last year. And having the continuity of me having been president for a number of years prior to, we actually went through a nationwide interview process, recruiting process, and we interviewed, you know, a handful of finalists. And it came down, we actually picked a local person, Doug Robertson, who had been the president of the association, like I am, for 25 years, had been away, from being a county commissioner for almost 10 years. And he had quite clearly the best interview of everybody we interviewed. And the board, there was an interview panel of five board members, and then eventually the full board decided to go with that knowledge and experience, and we're lucky to get him on board. That being said, there was and continues to be a learning curve. The difference between being the board president and being the executive director is pretty stark. And Doug has taken the time, and we're very lucky. Our outgoing executive director, Rocky McVeigh, who had been there for decades, was very gracious about helping onboard the new executive director and continues to be a resource. We have other staff members in the association that have stayed and helped with that transition. And we've done a lot of good work over this last year and continue to do. Really, there's four things the association does. We work on all aspects of legislation, including the most current forms of legislation in Congress. So for the last 100 years, we've worked on all the legislation around the ONC land. We've worked on management. We currently work on management. And then that's everything from trying to respond to the BLM request for comments to when there's proposals to put up gates, when there's road closures, to there's just a constant communication with the state office and the managing districts about how much timber is going to be harvested and projections and anything we can do to help the BLM manage these lands more productively. We are all about trying to help with that. We do a component of communication and education, which is important. We have found a lot of the historical knowledge of the ONC leaves when people retire from the agencies or when people no longer are elected officials that have learned and understand this issue, and whether that's at the local level or at the congressional level. So we do a lot of education of what ONC lands are, why they're unique, the great benefit they create to the community. And then more recently, starting in 2016, we've done a litigation, which is new for the organization, but really came down to where we had to do that. So those four components, that's legislation, management, education, and litigation are really those things that we focus on.
So talk about the litigation piece right now, because this has been going back and forth for quite a while. Most people know a lot of issues like this are fairly complex or not easily solved. Where do things stand right now, and what's ahead in the litigation front?
So we're about 5 months from hitting the 8-year mark from when we filed our lawsuit. So in the summer of 2016, we filed a lawsuit that basically declared that the 2016 resource management plan that the BLM had developed did not meet the legal requirement of the 1937 O&C Act. And two components of that. One is the requirement for the lands to be managed for sustained yield. And sustained yield is a conservation term, meaning you never harvest more timber off the land than what it can grow in any given year. That the new resource management plan did not meet that requirement, and that it took 80% of the land into reserve. And the second component that we challenged in court about the resource management plan is that the O&C Act calls for a minimum of 500 million board feet a year to be harvested until the sustained yield amount can be established. That sustained yield amount has been established at 1.2 billion board feet. That's with a B, billion board feet a year that these lands can grow. But the Act, or the resource management plan, calls for harvesting only 206 million board feet under the sustained yield. So those two reasons, you know, not managing the whole land base and not producing the minimum requirement of the Act, are the reasons we filed our lawsuit. We filed that lawsuit, again, the summer of 2016 in the Washington, D.C. Circuit, Federal Circuit Court. It took all the way to the end of 2019 for us to win that lawsuit. We did win that lawsuit. Industry had filed a similar lawsuit. We challenged the RMP on the minimum that they were supposed to harvest. The industry challenged them on the sustained yield amount, the 1.2 billion board feet. We both won, and the judge told the agency to redraft the plan to meet the requirements of the O&C Act. That was late in 2019. So all the way through 2020, the federal government did not appeal that decision, and we'd actually met with the Secretary of Interior and other people in Department of Interior, and it sounded like maybe they were not going to appeal that. We had an administrative change, and on the very last day the federal government had to appeal the case, they did. So they appealed that case to the Washington, D.C. Federal Court of Appeals. We had a three-judge panel, and again, that took quite a bit of time before we were heard in that court. One of the judges was appointed by Jimmy Carter.
Wow.
So think about sort of the age and the timing of that. They asked questions like, do these lands still meet the definition of timberlands? In other words, are all the trees gone? And really no recognition or knowledge of this land base. We got a bad ruling there, but we also have known from the very beginning this likely is going to be a Supreme Court case. So we now have petitioned the Supreme Court to hear this case. In the meantime, there was another case filed by the Association of Oregon O&C Counties, and that was around the Cascade-Siskiyou Monument expansion, where the Obama administration included approximately 40,000 acres of congressionally designated O&C land into monument status. And we believe that is a violation of the congressional intent of these lands. And we don't think that the Antiquities Act that allows a monument designation allows a president, any president, to override the congressional intent of the land. So those two separate cases now have been combined to one. So we are petitioning the U.S. Supreme Court to hear our case. It is a matter of nationwide concern because of this conflict between the congressional intent of the land. Again, in this case, it's O&C land to be managed under the principles of sustained yield. However, there's other congressionally designated lands that we don't believe the Antiquities Act allows a president to override the congressional intent of those lands, whether that's a national park that Congress has designated or a wilderness area or anything else. We think it's a bad precedent to have a president use the Antiquities Act to override congressional intent. So really the question is, who makes laws in this country? Does Congress make laws, or does the president make laws? And we do believe that is a national question. So one of the important criteria to get in front of the U.S. Supreme Court is it has to be a matter of national concern. The Supreme Court takes approximately, the U.S. Supreme Court takes approximately 1% of the cases that are appealed to or presented to them. So it's not a small lift to get to the U.S. Supreme Court, but we do believe this case does have a national concern in it, and it is that unique conflict between the executive branch of government and the legislative branch of government. And that conflict between Congress and the president is oftentimes when the third branch of government, the judicial branch, is necessary to step in. So we've made that appeal. We're expecting to hear a ruling on our petition to be heard by the Supreme Court, maybe as early as late April of this year.
Wow, pretty complex. We're going to talk more when we come back with County Commissioner Tim Freeman. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1251 at News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1251. Lars Larson coming up at 1 o'clock. Sarah Wickersham of CARES will be in for tomorrow's program. County Commissioner Tim Freeman talking about Association of ONC Counties and the National Association of Counties. Talk about some of the work that you have been working on lately.
Yeah, so one of the other roles I have is the Association of Oregon Counties, which often gets confused with the ONC County Association. So the Association of Oregon Counties, of course, we work on everything Oregon. Primarily the focus of that organization is on state issues. So I serve on the Public Lands Committee and also serve on the Legislative Committee. I think a lot of that's because of my past role in the legislature. And I'm on the board of directors for the Association of Oregon Counties. And we focus and work on all things that affect counties. As you might imagine, the Oregon legislature oftentimes doesn't think about the challenges of counties. They do unfunded mandates. They do a one-size-fits-all. And we have a saying amongst our Association of Oregon Counties, if you've been to one of the Oregon's 36 counties, if you've seen one, you've been to one. And that's all there is. We are all different, and we have very different needs. But through this association, we can oftentimes speak with one voice. And the reason why that's important to Douglas County, as big as we are in size, we're the fourth largest geographic county, we're only about 3% of the state's population. So, making sure that we are working at a state level and building coalitions and positions that align with other counties around the state and regionally with other states, other counties from other states, is important for us to have any influence in the legislative process. And the Association of Oregon Counties does good work. They have a whole host of issues they work on. Again, I focus a lot of my work on the public lands and some of the work they do there, firefighting. Oregon Department of Forestry is, our firefighter for private lands. They work along with DFPA. But when fires get big, they come in and they're the team that come in. They also protect the ONC land, so there's a lot of work to do there. And then through that legislative committee at the Association of Oregon Counties, really all recommendations on legislation that the counties are going to support or oppose come through that committee. So, again, I think it's important for Douglas County to have that connection with other counties in the state and in the West out here so that we do have a voice in what goes on.
How are you able to do all of that at the same time dealing with local county business?
Well, there is that balance that always needs to be met. I will tell you, we have a good team at the county. My fellow county commissioners, they really are part of a team. The three of us work very well together. We have great department heads and staff here locally. I do recognize that my first priority is always here locally. And there's times when you know, if we've got an emergency going on or something where I can't travel or I can't go do something regionally, I do make the priority to make sure things are taken care of here in the county first. One of the things that has really evolved over the last 3 or 4 years is the amount of remote meetings, Zoom meetings, go-to meetings where you don't have to travel. So a lot of the work I do in all of these different associations, I do from my office at the courthouse on a computer, you know, through a Zoom meeting. So the amount of travel has dropped dramatically in the last 3 years, which I'm grateful for.
All right, Douglas County Commissioner Tim Freeman, thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me.
1257 at News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.